Our scripture today is Romans 14, 1 through 12. It's in your Pew Bible and New Testament, page 152 through 153. Welcome those who are weak in faith, but not for the purpose of quarreling over opinions. Some believe in eating anything, while the weak eat only vegetables. Those who eat must not despise those who abstain. Those who abstain must not pass judgment on those who eat, for God has welcomed them who are to pass judgment on servants of another. It is before their own Lord that they stand or fall, and they will be upheld, for the Lord is able to make them stand. Some judge one day to be better than another, while others judge all days to be alike. Let all be fully convinced in their own minds. Those who observe the day, observe it in honor of the Lord. Those who eat, eat in honor of the Lord, since they give thanks to God, while those who abstain, abstain in honor of the Lord and give thanks to God. We do not live to ourselves, and we do not die to ourselves. If we live, we live to the Lord. And if we die, we die to the Lord. So then, whether we live or whether we die, we are the Lord's. For this end, Christ died and lived again, so that he might be Lord of both the dead and the living. Why do you pass judgment on your brother or sister? Why do you despise your brother or sister? For we will all stand before the judgment seat of God. For it is written, as I live, says the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall give praise to God. So then each of us will be accountable to God. The word of the Lord.
Let's turn to our gospel lesson. In our church, it is a tradition to stand if you are able and comfortable to do so during the gospel lesson. I invite you to do so if that is appropriate for you. This is Jesus' words for us from Matthew 18, beginning with verse 21. Simon Peter came and said to Jesus, Lord, if another member of the church sins against me, how often should I forgive? As many as seven times? And Jesus said to Simon Peter, not seven times, but I tell you, 77 times. For this reason, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his slaves. When he began reckoning, one who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him, and he could not pay. His Lord ordered him to be sold together with his wife and children and all his possessions in payment to be made. So the slave fell on his knees before him, saying, have patience with me, and I will pay you everything. And out of pity for him, the lord of that slave released him and forgave him the debt. But that same slave, as he went out, came upon one of his fellow slaves, who owed him 100 denarii. And seizing him by the throat, he said, pay what you owe. Then his fellow slaves fell down and pleaded with him, saying, have patience with me, and I will pay you. But he refused. Then he went and threw him into prison until he would pay the debt. When his fellow slaves saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed. And they went and reported to their lord all that had taken place. Then his lord summoned him and said to him, you wicked slave, I forgave you all the debt because you pleaded with me. Should you not have had mercy on your fellow slave as I have had mercy on you? And in anger, his Lord handed him over to be tortured until he would pay his entire debt. So my heavenly Father will also do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brothers or your sisters from your heart. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Division. Anybody aware of any divisions going on in the world around us? Okay, yeah, it was kind of a foregone. The division seems, in most parts, if I'm not mistaken, to be centered around politics. The political arena is increasingly divided. Has anybody but me noticed that? Immigration, taxes, health care, hawks versus doves, polite versus acrimonious discourse. I could go on. Now, some of you are out there saying, "Now, wait a minute, we're in church here. We're not, I don't want the nightly news. Why is the preacher talking politics? This is, I want to hear about the Bible and Jesus and things in there." Fair enough. Fair enough. Let's talk about the Bible and some of the central themes in the Bible itself. One of the most central themes in the Bible is hospitality. You've heard me say that before, haven't you? Hospitality is written through the welcoming the sojourner, welcoming the stranger. I see a lot of strangers out here. I know most of you, but you are still strange. Don't understand the problem there, but all right, we're getting off on a... So welcoming strangers, that is an immigration issue. By golly, the Bible's talking about an issue that's stuck in the political... Well, let's leave that one beside it. Obviously, just a coincidence. Let's talk about health care. Let's talk about taking care of the least. Let's talk about taking care of those that are on the margins. Let's talk about helping those that are hurting. Now, I'm just trying to remember. I don't have anything in the front of my mind right now, but as I think about some of the biblical passages I've read over the years, that didn't Jesus heal some people? Didn't he heal some people that nobody else would have anything? Didn't he actually heal somebody on the Sabbath? You're not allowed to work on the Sabbath, and healing is work, and he healed some. Didn't? Am I right on that? Was there? I'm not mistaken there, am I? By golly gee, there's another issue that's in the political arena that seems to be in the Bible as well. As to war and peace, ladies and gentlemen, my boss is the Prince of Peace. And that's enough on that for right now. Division seems to be the problem, and it's easy to get that on. Now, you remember annual conference? In June, we had our annual conference. And we went off to conference, and there were various speakers. I was kind of distracted, a lot of things going on, and I listened to some of the speakers, and You know how some speakers talk and it just comes in one ear and out the other. But this one has stuck with me since June, and it's been niggling at the back of my mind. So I went back and I thought, I better do some documentation on this speaker. And for the life of me, I can't not figure out exactly which one she was. Her name might have been Reverend Alexia Salvatierra. I may be also mistaken about that name, but she spoke about immigration. And I thought, this is interesting. I wonder what's going on. But she works in that area. And she works helping families struggling with immigration issues and with the whole system. And she said, the immigration system is broken. Everybody acknowledges that. And then she proceeded to give us case examples. She gave us real family examples. She had to change the names. But she told us about people and some of the things going on. And you could hear people just gasp to hear some of the things that are going on. And it would break your heart to hear these things. And after she told us several of them, she said, now I want you to understand this: the immigration system is not working in our country. She says, a bunch of years ago we had a reform package. Congress knew that it was messed up, and a bunch of wise congressional leaders got together and they came up with a great plan to change it all. It had bipartisan support. There's something you don't hear very often. But people on one side, people on everybody was in agreement that this is what needed to happen. They were all, everything fit. It was just, and they were ready to make this. And something happened in the political arena that created some polarization. And all of a sudden, the bipartisan gatherings wouldn't talk to each other anymore. It was the Hatfields and McCoys. You've heard of the Hatfields and McCoys, haven't you? I guess it's actually based in fact, which is scarier than anything else. But these two families that just are nothing about the other family is okay, period. You know, and you just, no matter what they do, it's wrong. And it's vengeance and reactions and retaliations and attacks and division. And that seems to be what has happened there. And so immigration reform did not occur. Startlingly, I heard information this week that said that less than 30% of the population of the United States believes that we need to repeal DACA. That we don't want to break these kids that were born and raised here or brought here as little kids. We don't want to send them back. That we have compassion and hearts and that we're ready to figure out a way to make something work. But the division doesn't allow us to even talk to each other about it. We're so polarized that they just can't even come up with a discussion. Which brings us to the sermon title. Did you notice that in the forcept? It was pointed out to me at Jefferson Avenue this morning that women have a different concept of forceps. And I had to kind of think about that. So I apologize. My concept of forceps is two words. Forgiveness and acceptance. I wanted to pique people's interest with the forceps, but it didn't. I don't know if it worked or if it just got us more confused. We're out of the lectionary today. Lectionary is a 3-year cycle of readings of scriptures that takes us through most of the Bible. And these are the scriptures that came straight out of that, and I read all of them and I thought, I don't want to preach on any of these. This is not the direction I want to go, but that didn't let go of me. And I said, all right, I guess I will. We didn't read the Old Testament passage from Genesis. We've been talking about Joseph. You remember Joseph and the Technicolor dream coat, the coat of many sleeves? You remember the stories we've been talking about? There's little Joseph and his father loves him best and the brothers are jealous and it gets nasty and it gets heated and it turns and he goes out to see the brothers and they decide they're going to kill him. That's a mean thing to do, even to a brother. I had a brother, love my brother. Didn't at the time, but I do now. It's a, you know how that goes. They decide, well, instead of killing him and having the blood on our hands, we'll throw him in a pit and let the critters eat him. That's a lot of help, isn't it? And then they decide, well, we could sell him and make money. So they sell him into slavery. Your sibling selling you into slavery, that's feeling pretty good. He ends up in Egypt, long story short, and he becomes second under Pharaoh over Egypt, overseeing the entire nation. He's mostly Egyptian at this point in time, and when his brothers come trying to buy grain, they don't recognize him. And when they find out who he is, they are terrified because they know and he knows and they know he knows and he knows they know he... Well, you know where I'm going with that. But he forgives them. And in the passage from the lectionary that we would have read today if we'd had time is Jacob, who was Joseph's daddy. Remember Jacob and Rebekah? But Jacob has died. And the brothers were convinced that Joseph forgave them because of his father, and it was what his father would have wanted, and he wanted to maintain that relationship with his father. And now that his father is dead, that Joseph might lower the hammer on them. Not only can he, but he has the right, and legally he could certainly pursue that. And how many of us would forgive siblings slaving us into slavery? But he says no. He says, no, you can rest assured I have forgiven you from my heart. That's a tough thing to do. This is a huge, difficult thing to do. And it begs a couple questions. Fred Craddock lifted it up, my favorite preacher. He said, from a distance, forgiveness may be like condoning or permissiveness. But in reality, forgiveness takes the violators, the violated, and the violation most seriously. To be forgiven is to be taken seriously. Forgiveness does not eliminate, but fulfills righteousness. I had to really stop and think through all of that. It's not forgiving them. What the brothers did, a terrible, horrible, nasty, what they did was wrong and should never be done and should never be allowed to be done anytime. And he doesn't condone that. But he also says, you'll answer to the boss, not me. God will judge, and God knows how to judge, and God will judge appropriately. God knows the right things to do. And then we turn to the New Testament passage I read. This is a tough one. I remember growing up, and there was a saying that when we were in high school, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. It didn't go to fool me seven times. If someone defrauded you seven times? And that's what Simon Peter says to Jesus. If my neighbor, let me get it right. If a member of the church sins against me, how often should I forgive? As many as seven times? Now there's a translation problem in the Hebrew or the Greek. I don't read enough Greek, but it's either seven times seven times or seven times 77 times or 70 times 77 times. It's a bunch of times. Don't care how many, but it's a bunch of times forgiving. That's a lot of forgiving. And he doesn't mince any words. It's a few short verses. As many, I say seven times, 70 times. And then he tells that story. He tells that story about the master who forgives his servant. And then the servant does not forgive those who owe him. We're talking about God forgiving us and us not forgiving others. He turns them over to be sent to prison and to our text said the torturers. The text can also be read the jailers. It was kind of the same term back in that time and day. They were the same boat. That's a tough passage. There's no getting around that. I read that and said, I'm not sure I want to go here with that today because forgiveness is hard. I stand here before you as your pastor acknowledging that I am still on my journey on that. It's hard sometimes to forgive things. But there's some important things that we got to unpack, and Paul helps us with that. Paul's letter is an interesting one. He's never been to Rome, but he writes a letter there because he knows they're divided. You'd think back with Jesus there to teach you and lead you and guide you and everything going on, everything would be just rosy perfect. But there was division. The Jews grew up and they knew the Jewish rules. If you're a Jew, you can't eat certain things. You can't eat pork. You can't eat this. You can't eat that. There were unclean foods. And there are special days. The Sabbath is holy. Sabbath is special. You don't work on the Sabbath. There are other special holidays. And you've got to remember those and you've got to honor those. But here come some Greeks that are joining the Christian following. And they eat anything. Wasn't there a commercial about that? Give it to Mikey, he'll eat anything. I'm sorry. I'm just wandering a little here. But here are these Greeks and they don't have any food problems. And the Jews are over there saying, well, I can't sit at table with somebody who eats unclean things. I can't eat, you know, and it's Sabbath. They're doing work. They're out there plowing fields on the Sabbath. I can't. It's a huge division. Paul doesn't take sides. He doesn't say one's right or one's wrong. Is it Constantine or Constantin? Well, it doesn't matter. Leave that out of the problem. Just figure out what things you can hold together with. Jewish priest or a Jewish rabbi and a Catholic priest became friends. It was a small town, and you know they're both in the ministry, studying the same sets of scriptures, if you will. Became pretty good friends. Went to lunch often. One day at lunch, the Catholic priest is having a barbecue pork sandwich. It is delicious. And he is enjoying it immensely. And he says to his friend, the rabbi, he said, "This sandwich is amazing. You would love this sandwich." He said, "You should try this sandwich." And he, teasing him a little. And the rabbi turns to him. He says, "You know, I think I might when I dance at your wedding." Priests can't marry. All right. It would be all right for them to have lunches together, though. You don't have to worry about food differences, and you don't have to worry about day differences, and you don't have to worry about whether or not you can get married or not. You can figure out the things that you can do together. This is Constitution Sunday, I discovered. Saw it on the news Thursday or Friday or something. Bunch of kids celebrating the U.S. Constitution. You ever heard of the Constitution? Yeah. You've heard of the Declaration of Independence. What year? 1776. When was the Constitution adopted? I didn't know it until then. 1787. That's what they said on the news. I'm just quoting my sources. I could be wrong too. Country coming together around some central issues. The Declaration of Independence, they were breaking our nation away from England, from a king that was abusing the nation, from all of the different things that were happening, taxation without representation and all of that that was going on. And they were agreed that they needed to do that. They needed to break and rebel. And then they came to an impasse because Jefferson had written in there that they would abolish slavery in this new land. And the southern states said, "Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. We don't agree with that. We agree with this part, but no, this part we don't agree with." And it almost derailed the whole process. It was a tough thing. John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, they're arguing. If you've seen the movie or the play or the musical 1776, it's spelled out pretty graphically. A beautiful thing. They had to take that piece that they didn't agree on and they had to take that out. And they said, "This part we agree on. This Declaration of Independence and the one we have is one that we can all sign." And they did. The slavery issue had to be resolved. And we're still in the process of working our way through that race issue, aren't we? We see that on the news. We see some of the struggles. We see some of the things going on. But we got to agree with, we got to focus on the things that we do agree on. The things that don't divide us but hold us together. Paul says it, "Those who eat must not despise those who abstain. And those who abstain must not pass judgment on those who eat. For God has welcomed them all." Then you remember the sliver in our eye? Paul sticks his finger right on that sliver and he says, "Who are you to pass judgment on servants of another? It is before their own Lord that they must stand or fall." So that passage is important, and that passage in Matthew comes back. And it asks us, who are we focused on? Who are we about? Who are we taking care of? Who are we trying to be about? We do not live to ourselves, he says, and we do not die to ourselves. If we live, we live to the Lord, and if we die, we die to the Lord. Judging is not in there anywhere. Judging isn't something that is ours to do. And that helps us back away from having to do that judging and that deciding and that breaking apart. So forgiveness. Forgiveness. Forgiveness begins with forgiving ourselves because the Lord has forgiven us. Think about that a minute. The Lord, when we confess, the Lord has forgiven us. Think about that. That forgiveness is beyond price. Undeserved, unmerited, incredible. And we are that servant that was forgiven his debt, and then we don't forgive others. we are convicted of that. I have good news. I've been watching the news, and if I were as smart as Sue and I could do all these video things and computer things and pull all this together, I would take some of the news footage from Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma and Texas and Houston and Louisiana, Florida. And I'd put them all together and I'd show you some pictures because I've seen it. I've seen it. There are Hatfields helping McCoys down there. There's some McCoys making food to feed the Hatfields. There's black people helping white people and white people taking care of black people. There's people taking care of people and they didn't check to see if they're the right ones. They didn't see if they all thought alike and they all thought the same things. They didn't say, who did you vote for? Okay, you can get in the boat. There was an editorial. Somebody said, does it take a national disaster to bring this nation together? It seems that that's kind of what has become the case. But we need to think about what that's about. And it shouldn't take a disaster. It shouldn't take that kind of a event. It should only take our obedience to Christ. That should be enough. And maybe that's a good place to start. Amen?